So this week is Parshat Mishpatim. We'll start our unit very soon. But for those who came on early, I know there's a dedication by Marty. We'll discuss that soon.
I'll start in half a minute, and then I'll do it. It's still only 11:14, so I can't, you know.
Okay, yeah. So on Shabbat, Benny Gesundheit is one of the teachers in your program, and a good friend of mine, a good friend of yours. So we had lunch together on Shabbat. Actually, we were learning Torah together on Shabbat, ate in between a little bit. Because of Corona, we have an outdoor minyan. So I daven outdoors in his neighborhood for lunch. I mean, for Shacharit, the Musaf. So in their minyan, their street that Benny lives on, the street. On that street, Rabbi Moshe Lichtenstein lives on that street, Rabbi Yaakov Meidan, Rabbi Moshe Tarragon, and Noam Solberg, who's the Chief Justice in the Israeli Supreme Court.
It's a good street to live on. Tov l'shcheino, tov.
So it's a pretty serious minyan there. And there's other this Shabbos happened to be Judge Solberg's, Noam Solberg, he's the judge in the Supreme Court. It was his 60th birthday. So they made him a surprise party, but he's also the Baal Kore. Uh-huh. So he read Parshat. What was this week? Yitro. And so I had Kohen, and luckily there was no Levi, so I had Kohen and Levi. So I got to Eliyah when he read all the laws about establishing a court system, to make sure Anshei Yirei Elohim, Sonei Batza, Anshei Chayo, remember? When Yitro gives this idea about setting up a Supreme Court system. So I thought that was a pretty neat to get in Eliyah. We're a Supreme Court, a Dati Supreme Court, in the Israeli court system, the Israeli Supreme Court. Reads the Torah reading about setting up the Supreme Court. And I got to have the Aliyah on her 60th birthday.
So that cool. Very nice. So I'll tell you the joke I've said before when Rabbi Tarragon, who was at the Minyan on the street, Rabbi Moshe Tarragon.
He has Corona, so he wasn't there.
Oh, he wasn't there. Right. Azari told me he has Corona. Yeah. It's because he's in this. We had him many years ago here in Toronto. So he spoke on Parshat Yitro. So he discussed one of Yitro's requirements. Sonei Betza, you have to hate money. So Rabbi Tarragon is, where are you going to find a judge who hates money? Come on. How what is Torah saying? So he said, if you pay enough money, you can find anybody. Okay. All right.
That's pretty much Rashi on Anshei. That's what Rashi says on Anshei Chayil.
Means
people are wealthy. They won't need to take a bribe.
Right. Correct. Right. Rashi. It's not that they hate money because that's impossible to find. That they won't. They won't go to court to take our money. Anyway, on that note, we'll officially welcome everybody on behalf of Torah Motion to Rabbi Liebtag's new series. Always a pleasure. After 1 week break, had withdrawal, syndrome. After 1 week, it's a pleasure to welcome back for our regular Sunday shares. We start a new topic on how to read a book in Chumash, how to divide up. And it's a pleasure this morning. We want to thank Marty Corsell, who is sponsoring this year in memory of his grandfather, Avraham Fuchs, Avraham Dov Ben Moshe, his uncle, who was killed in the Holocaust, Moshe Yisrael Fuchs, and his professor and mentor, Dr. Noah Meltz, who we know well here in Toronto, Alav HaShalom, and his mother, Charlotte Corsell, Zlata Bat Avraham Dov. May we be blessed with good health and long life and have occasion to celebrate the happy occasions all together. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. Bakasha, Rabbi, it's all yours.
So I have to add to Marty's dedication, a personal connection, which only found out thanks because Marty wrote me about it. He has grandparents and great-grandparents who, when they came after the Holocaust, settled in Akron, Ohio. Now, Akron, Ohio happens to be the city where I grew up and was born, but my father, Olav Shalom, was a rabbi there for many years. And the shul that I grew up in, one of the builders was a family member. Ted Schneider was the Schneiderman family, Sam Schneiderman. And Ted Schneiderman was a judge in Akron, if I remember correctly. They were members of my father's shul and big members in the community. And he was also a judge, in the regular in civil court in Akron, Ohio. But I remember fondly growing up, I remember those names. So it's a big honor for me to be able to begin a topic, which our topic today will be pretty much Parshat Mishpatim, but very much related to all those topics. Now, so let me get started. Let me share my source sheet. I think it's over here somewhere, and we'll get started. Here we are. Okay, so it's our title is How to Study a Biblical Book, and I thought this is a new title from text, the context, the theme, and actually the title now is actually the topic, because every week we're going to start with the text, and then after we study the text, we'll try to take into consideration the context, and then we'll use the context to build, to see how it relates to the theme of the book. Or in a nutshell, as we're going to try and show you over and over again, when you study Chumash, you don't only study what's written, but also how it's presented. Now, let me move this up here. And I'm going to start as follows. I want to begin with studying a text. And the title, you'll only understand the title later on. The title is Identifying Units Today. We're going to identify a unit, actually more than one unit. And it'll be a case study based on Parshat Mishpatim. There's something special about that title you'll understand in about a half hour. Okay, so we all read the Ten Commandments on Shabbat. Everyone knows the story. I want to begin this year by picking up with a story, just reading the last Aliyah we read, the last two Aliyahs on Shabbat after the Ten Commandments. And I want to show you a methodology about how to identify a unit and how important that unit's going to be. Not just something technical, something very basic to understanding Chumash. So we'll start with Lo Tachmod, the last of the Ten Commandments. When that's over, there's a famous story when the people become very fearful from the theophany, from what happened, from all the sound. And what's important to us is Pasuk Tevav. Vayemru Moshe, the people tell Moshe, Daber Atayimanu v'nishma, after hearing God's voice and hearing God at Har Sinai and being so close to God, the people say that's enough. And they say, Moshe, we want you to speak to us and we'll listen. We don't want God to speak to us, lest we die. Moshe tells the people, don't be so fearful because fear is good for you. There is something, the main thing to fear is fear itself, basically Moshe says. God's testing you in order that you fear him all the time. So that fear will lead you not to sin. Whether Moshe is telling them to come back where they were, is Moshe agreeing with them or disagreeing? That's a big argument among the commentators. But when it's over, Vayamod HaMerachok, the people stand at a distance, and Moshe goes into the Arafel, where God was. This Moshe goes up to the mountain to be with God in the cloud, and the people stay in a distance, and now Moshe is going to get the laws on behalf of the people. Now, there's a big argument, which we discussed this, I think we did a whole series on Mount Sinai, didn't we? I'm pretty sure we did. There we discussed when this story happened. Did it happen between Commandment 2 or 3 or before or after? But whether this story happened now or the story in Devarim happened now, but everyone agrees that after the Ten Commandments, God no longer speaks directly to the people. God now speaks through Moshe. So if this story doesn't belong here, the story in Devarim about the fear belongs here. So either way, our next comment will make sense. Therefore, let me summarize. What needs to happen next, we receive what we call the Ten Commandments or the Ten Statements, the Dibrot, which is a type of a contract between God and his people. Now there's more laws. You know, Ten Statements is not enough to build a people. We need many more laws. And now God is going to tell Moshe Rabbeinu the laws to tell the people, because that's what they asked for. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, God tells Moshe, Kol Tomara B'nei Yisrael, here's what I want you to tell the children of Israel. Got that? And then dot, dot, dot. I put here in, let me highlight it with my little annotator, and we'll draw make a purple light here. You see this little quotation mark? That's the whole share today. Meaning, we open a quotation mark now, and therefore God tells Moshe, go tell B'nai Yisrael the following, and we have to see now where this section of laws that God is going to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, where it's going to end. So God tells Moshe, here's what I want you to tell the children of Israel. I have to identify a unit that begins here, but what I have to pay attention to, there's a unit here that's going to, we'll see how far it'll go to, but it comes together with the Ten Commandments. And we'll see soon, it's a very important set of laws. So let's see what the first law is, just to get into the unit, to have a taste of the unit. Let's mouse and say what happens. You saw that I spoke to you from heaven. Therefore, don't make out of me gods of gold and silver, don't do you. The simplest explanation here, and it's easy to prove later on, is that God's not saying don't serve other gods, but rather don't serve me by making images of me of gold and silver. You had an experience, you want to remember the experience. So I always use the, with my 18, I'll give you a little stuff to share for a second. When I teach just 18-year-olds, even whatever age group, the example I'd like to give is from sweatshirts at the end of the end of a gap year. I don't think you'll find a seminary or a yeshiva or any kind of one-year program, even any summer program, where at the end of the program, everyone who was in the program has either a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. I'm sure you're familiar with the custom. Now, I use that analogy to explain idol worship in a positive way. Explain why. No one at the end of the year needs a sweatshirt. They have 50 in their closet at home somewhere, at least 20. No one needs a sweatshirt, but everyone needs a symbol of their year, of their experience, be it the 2 months they spent in summer camp, be it the year they spent in Israel for the year, being a, whatever program they were in, you need a eternal memory of that experience. Now, again, I need something, I need some physical object to remember. Sweatshirts happen to be our custom, our minhag. So in ancient times, the minhag was making like, you know, idols and things like that. But our custom is making sweatshirts. And what's important is what you put on the sweatshirt. So what you can have on the front and the back of the sweatshirt, someone has to design it. And the people designing the sweatshirt are going to have something on there that usually have something that will remind the people of their year. Usually it's going to be something that only the people who went through that experience will understand the symbolism of it. It could be something they can explain to others. Some things people can figure out. But you want to put something there that sort of summarizes or typifies what your experience was about. So that's got the idea? Therefore, everyone went through this Har Sinai experience. That was a big wow. What's God afraid of? Oh, we were at Har Sinai. We went to the Super Bowl. We were there. I need a souvenir to bring home. Remember, every time you go to any Disney thing, there's a gift shop at the end, you need a souvenir. It works to this day. It's human nature. That's why I'm explaining it. And that's what happens. People need a memory of Mount Sinai. What's God afraid of? What are they going to do to remember it? They'll make a golden image of, you know, of what they thought God looked like, whatever it was. So God's saying, don't make any image of me out of gold. Got that? No, that's not idol worship. That's idol worship, IDLE, or what I call it in Hebrew. Instead of, there's Avodah Zarah, which is serving another God, and Avodah Zarah, which is serving our God the wrong way. Got the idea? No, is Zarah describing the God or the Avodah or the service? So God's saying, I know you want to serve me. I'm not doubting you want to serve me, but don't serve me the wrong way. Remember, you might have good intentions, but it goes bad, and there's going to be a whole... This is the background to Chet Egel, in case you didn't catch on. Now, what are we going to do now? So God's saying, don't serve me with gold. Instead, and this proves it, the next line will prove it. What do you do instead? Mizbech Adamah Taseli, keep it simple. An earthen Mizbech is enough. And on that, you can bring all your sacrifices, you know, any sacrifice you want to bring. And wherever, I'll follow, I think Rashbam here says, any place, or even Rashi, I think, any place that I allow you to mention my name, not that God's going to mention my name, but any place that I allow you to mention my name. Remember, Avram builds an altar and calls out in God's name. If an altar is a place where you make a name for God by having, you know, this sort of cookout in God's name, therefore, whatever you do that, that's okay. I'll come and bless you. If we have time, we'll return to the same, if not this week, next week. If you really want to go fancy, no, Mizbech Adamah, that's enough. You want to go like, you want to take it to an extreme? Okay. In Mizbech Avanim Tasadli, you want to make a fancy Mizbech out of stones, like more impressive, okay, that's fine, but only stones that are like natural in the ground, but don't chisel them down. Don't build them, don't make them hewn stones, only because the second you put your sword on it, it gets ruined. Remember, a sword brings death. That's what most parshanim say. And these stones have to be simple. And therefore, you can use stones, but not use metal on them to cut them. Okay, so this is it begins with a classic law about how to serve God, which I would expect. Now, but these laws continue. So that's the question to where. So we have to ask ourselves now, where to find the quotation mark? Where do I close my quotation mark? So we'll do this together if you have a Tanakh with you. it's good to take a look on your own, but we'll do it together. And here I simply need a Hebrew Tanakh because online, because you can see more text at that together. So I'm going to stop my share from my source sheet and go to my Tanakh over here. Where'd it go? Okay, there's the Shmot Targimel. So we have one more law about once you build Mizbech Avanim, a fancy one, but you have to have a ramp and you can't have steps. And then we continue in Perachav Aleph with what law? Ve'ila HaMishpatim. Asher Tassimav. Now there's a group of judgments, or we'll see what Mishpatim means, but a group of a set of laws you have to put before them, before the people. Okay? And then we have laws about a Jewish slave. And then we have more laws about slavery. And then we have laws about damages. Makish, we'll see. This, I'm just reading. I'm going to make this a little bit smaller. We have lots and lots of laws. And I'll just point something out now. But there's a key word, pun intended, all through this section. See how it begins? Ki tikne eved ivri. And then it says, v'chim kor ish et bitolama. V'chi yazid ish areyo. What's the next one? V'chi ruvun anashim. V'chi yake ish et avdo. V'chi yinatsu anashim. V'chi yake. V'chi yigach. Where's some more? V'chi yiftach. Got it? V'chi yigof. Ki yignov. That's my, I hope you understand my pun. There's a key word in the section, but there's a section of laws that every subsection of laws begins with the word key or something similar. We'll see why, but key can mean either if or when. Usually it means when something happens, should this happen. So all chapter 21, we're continuing with laws. And we'll see very soon, these laws continue right into chapter 22. The chapter break here makes almost no sense at all. The Re'im is usually whenever you have a key, a subset of key, there's a key setting a new stage, and then a subset of that key is going to be an Re'im. Also meaning, but you know, should it be this, should it be that? Ki aver ish, ki etzeg, and we're not translating, just showing a whole set of laws that continues. Ki ten ish areo bismar, ki ten ish areo hamar ashor, ki shaw ish mim reo, ki fate ish betula, got it? All the way through the middle of chapter 22, all chapter 21, halfway to chapter 22, numerous laws. We'll talk about what's special about them and what they're about, but a whole set of laws that begin with certain cases. Then all of a sudden there's a change. We have laws about witchcraft for some reason, laws about different offerings, then laws about treating a stranger, orphan, and widow, laws about lending money, laws about not cursing either God or political leaders, or this we'll talk about later. What type of law, most likely this law about paying taxes, we'll see. And then we continue in Perachav Gimel, again, more laws. About what? About laws about the governed Beit Din's behavior, following majority rule and things like that. Laws about returning lost items. Laws about not doing injustice. Yidvar Sheker Techach, a couple famous ones. Not taking Shochad. We said that before. Again, something about strangers. And then we finally get some normal laws about Shemitah and Shabbat. And finally, when we get towards the end of Perachav Gimel, we have the Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage holidays, Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaKatzir, and Chag HaAsif, and some more laws about Korbanot. And but we're still within that quotation mark. Hope you're catching on. Chapter 21, 22, 23, all laws. And we'll see soon. The law section is going to end here. With what are the laws that cost us a tremendous amount of money? The need for two sets of dishes, two sinks, two refrigerators, two ovens, okay, and then four actually for Yom Tov also for Pesach. So and then we have some kind of promise God's going to send a Malach to lead us to the land of Israel, and the rest of the section here of Verse Perachav Gimel again. How God's going to help us conquer the land of Israel. But what we need to do once we conquer it, again, more laws, but in the context of what happens when you come to the land of Israel, some very general principles about how we interact with the foreign population. But we're still having laws. Then you look in the beginning of Perachav Daled, and what happens? Ve'el Moshe Amar, da-da-da. In the beginning of chapter 24, the narrator of Chumash returns. What we call Chumash is now talking. So, the same narrator, again, Chumash is written, the way God gives us Chumash, Chumash is presented by, I like to call it the omniscient narrator, recorded by Moshe Rabbeinu, but representing God, but when you read Chumash, there's always this narrator. We call the omniscient narrator, who's telling us the story. And when he tells the story, sometimes we have quotes. But now the same the same speaker of Chumash who told us that Moshe went into the Arafel and God told Moshe Rabbeinu, Kotamar, now that tells us, and by the way, Moshe had also, God had also told Moshe Rabbeinu to go up the mountain with Aaron, Nadav, and Abihu and make a ceremony. And that's the famous Nasa v'Nishma story later on. So basically what we've done, so I go back to the end of Perek Chaf Gimel, where do we put our final quotation mark? Comes right over here. I'll just draw it for fun. Draw, and we have right over here, we could, how did it supposed to be read? Okay. We have our final quotation mark over here.
No, it's up a few verses. You put it in Lamed Bein instead of Kaf Dalet, I think it is.
Oh, you're right. My mistake. Wait a second. Chaf Gimel.
Yeah.
Wait, what happened here? Wait, let me.
You slid the page down a little bit too much.
Pick up the share and go back again.
It's right. Lamokesh is
the end of Perek Chaf Gimel, and we're over
it's
here.
Right.
It's Lo Tevash Ogdi B'Chaleivimo is
where No. Lamokesh is correct.
That's my whole point. Yeah. My whole point is the quotation marks end here. At the end of Perek Chaf Gimel, after the promise. And this, God is still talking to Moshe here.
Okay, my apologies.
Okay. I'll drop it. But no, it's good. I'm glad you did. I know you did that on purpose. Because when I teach this in class and I ask where, when I teach this in class and ask the class to find it, half the class ends over here with Lo Tevash Ogdi B'Chaleivimo. And the other half of the class ends over here. Because they notice there's laws and the laws end here. But it's important to understand that this is God still talking to Moshe Rabbeinu to tell this to Am Yisrael. Because here we'll see God is talking to Am Yisrael, not to Moshe. When God says, I'm sending a malach in front of you, God's not talking to Moshe. God's telling Moshe, tell this to Bnei Yisrael. And that how you read this is going to be critical in understanding Chet Ha'Egel later on. Okay? So now we've identified our unit till here. Got it? Now I'm going to talk about, actually I gave it away sort of. I want to talk about a black box theory. What's my black box theory? Right now, I have a black box, meaning I have a unit that follows the Ten Commandments. Got it? That seems to be, that appears to be Mshat, given together with the Ten Commandments on the same day. A set of laws that possibly, and some Parshanim bring up this possibility, is that had we not become fearful at Har Sinai, in addition to hearing the Ten Commandments from God, we might have also heard these laws from God, but they got scared in the meantime. But we have a set of laws that's not it's less than 613, but more than 10. Got it? And what's the big question? Why are these laws coming together with the Ten Commandments? Before I open up the box, I call it this black box. I have a box of laws. I have a unit of laws and something that follows the laws that come together with the Ten Commandments, most likely on the same day. And it's not the entire Torah, but it's a lot. It's more than 10. I forgot exactly what the count, but it's probably in the high 50s, 60s. There's a whole set of laws here. The question is going to be, why are these laws coming with the Ten Commandments? Are they the most important laws? Do they come to explain the Ten Commandments? Are they something that people need to know right away? Are they the most urgent laws? You follow? You know the famous thing in management? You have to always machalek between what's urgent and what's important. You ever hear that one? It's when you balance your time, people mismanage their time. They spend too much time working on what's urgent instead of what's important. And you know, you're always doing things that are urgent, but when you're so busy doing things that are urgent, you don't do things, you miss things that are important. So you just have to balance between the two. So send it here. Are these laws the most urgent or the most important? Hope you have the analogy. I'm not sure, but I want to ask those questions before I open up the box. So again, I just showed you, maybe we went through a bit too much detail about what the laws were, but what we noticed, we have a whole bunch of laws, three chapters of them. And now we have to open the box and see what they're about. What are they? And these laws are followed by this little promise at the end. So what we're going to do now, I'll do a quick version of it. I'm going to do a quick scan through the laws just to get the big picture. And next week we'll go into more detail about what's inside the box. But now again, remember from text to context. So first we have to identify a unit. Because we've identified a unit. In that unit, I have to see what's inside the unit. And then I have to ask myself, why is this unit located between the Ten Commandments and the, what's called Brit Nasa V'Nishma that follows. But before I look at it, I'm assuming it's something important. Again, is it important because it's urgent, or is it important because the laws are important for all generations? So let's take a look at what we have. So again, our first law was about how to serve God the right way or not to serve him the wrong way. And what's interesting, so where's the end of the unit? I was just answer Jennifer's question again. The unit ends in the end of chapter 23. From the end of chapter 20 to the end of chapter 23, three chapters plus four lines. Got it? Of laws. Now we're going to open up the box with a cursory reading just to get a taste of everything. So now I'll share my screen again. And actually, you know what? Let's open up a Tanakh and do it the proper way. Let's take a teal through the book. Okay, we'll take English, Hebrew. The first set of laws about how to treat again, I don't want to say a Jewish slave because Chumash didn't say Jewish slave. It says an Eved Ivri. It's Ivri means someone Jewish or someone wandering. Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun has a great article on this, but that's Iyun. Don't let me do that, okay? But there's so much great topics here, but I got to stay away from it. Just in general, these are laws of a Jewish slave, the first 11 verses. Without going into it, I'm sure everyone remembers. Then we have laws about damages that begins with Makesh Bamit Mot Yumat. Now, just to get a taste here of how these connect to the Ten Commandments, what law in the Ten Commandments relates to Pasuk Yud Bet? Makesh Bamit Mot Yumat.
Lo Tirtzach.
It's simple, right? But what's the difference between Lo Tirtzach and this? Lo Tirtzach is absolute. Got it? Don't do it. What happens if you kill? I don't know. Doesn't say, does it? And the Ten Commandments says just don't do it. There's no consequences of what happens if you do any of those laws in the second half, right? Lo Tirtzach didn't say what the punishment is. It says, don't do it. Here, what's it say? If one person kills another person, he's put to death. So I have some more clarity now. Now I know that there's a concept of capital punishment. But now pretend you're a rabbi. What's that mean? Let's say I accidentally hit somebody and he dies. Don't want to be put to death? Well, that's going to be next time. But that's if it's unintentional. So then God will give you a place of refuge. But what's considered intentional? If I intended to hit Reuven, okay, but instead I hit Shimon, now I wanted to kill someone, but I killed the wrong person, I didn't want to, am I put to death? What happens if I wanted to smack him, but I didn't want to kill him? I just wanted to teach him a lesson because he voted for the wrong political party. So I can hit him, right? I might burn his car, I might, you know, smack him with a thing because he's ruining our hold to the land of Israel. But what's my punishment? You follow? I didn't want to kill the person. I only wanted to hurt him. And what happens if that person does? You follow? There's a whole Masechet called, what? I mean, that's the Seder Nesikin. That's Masechet Sanhedrin. But boy, you follow? We're making progress, but we have lots more to come. So just an example how I have something in Ten Commandments that relates to this, but I'm getting a little more detailed. But what's special here is I don't only have a law, but I have also the consequence. And remember, we'll see. Guess who's going to everyone needs to know the laws. Who's going to execute the punishments? That's Beit Din. That's why they're called Mishpatim, because they go to a Shofet. And as you see, when you go through the section, the name for the Shofet is not Shoftim. Anyone know the name for the Shoftim? What the judges are called in Parshat Mishpatim?
Elohim.
Judges are called Elohim, exactly. Which is so deep, again, but not for now. You know, doing something to your parents is worse. I think it's beautiful in Mekalel Aviv when you curse someone. I mean, not anyone, but your parents. Here we have verbal abuse is equivalent to physical abuse. Maybe we learn something from there. If someone fights and there's damages, a person, you know, is injured, can't go back to work, paying damages. Basically, we have a whole set of laws to deal with damages caused by one human being assaulting another human being. Got that? That takes you through and laws applying both to if one human hurts another citizen or if you hurt also a slave or a servant. Now, that takes you to Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Then we have something similar, but quite different, where damage again caused by assault, but that's something that you did to someone else, but something your property. Let's say you own an ox, maybe you have to plow your field. You're walking your ox, you know, on the way to the field. And on the same road, coming home from shul, is another person, again, and your ox gores that person. Now we're ready to learn Baba Kama, no, in Ezekiel. So what happens if your property hurts another person. And then it depends whether remember short time, short mawad. That's the different laws. What happens if your servant, okay? What do you call it? It's a then if your servant does something, what happens if you open up a pit in the public domain and someone falls into it? Are you responsible? What happens if you if your animal hurts another animal? Got it? So basically, there's lots of different ways that a person can cause financial damage to another person, either through assault, your assault, through your property, or sometimes your action. But bottom line, in every single case, there's damage done to another person. And the question is who's responsible and taking that responsibility. You can also cause damage by stealing something. Got it? And then we continue in chapter 22. What happens when you steal and you catch the ganav and things like that? Then let's say your animal's in the field and starts eating from someone else's field. You have to pay back from the food he ate, and you have to pay the highest rate. You can start a fire in your field, but if you're not careful and your fire in your field goes to another field, you have to take responsibility. You can cause damage by negligence. I can watch something for somebody, but not watch it carefully. Called Shomrim, Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sachar, all these famous laws. Basically, and here again, sometimes you have to take an oath, and you go to Elohim, which here is the judges, for the oath. Anyway, this is all laws, what's called Nizikin. Then when you borrow things, you're also responsible. And I want to end with this last case, because sometimes it's misunderstood. Let's say there's what's called a date that went a little too far. Okay, well, make it in this way. No, it's not classic. It's not a case of rape, but rather a case of a relationship that people got together, and he really should marry her now after what happened. But if he doesn't want to marry her because of what happened, her value in the shidduch market just went down. So we don't learn from here that women are treated like property. But because the topic here is financial damage caused to other people, your actions in this relationship are going to cause her father to lose money. And therefore, you have to pay her father the change in her value because of what you did. Okay? So all I want to show you is all these cases up until now are where one person, through his actions, causes damage to another person, either physical damage or financial damage. Watch the change now in Pasuk Yitzayin. Mechashefa lo tchaya. Oh, I should have mentioned, all these laws are beit adam l'chaveru, aren't they? That should be obvious between man and fellow man. Now, what's this law about a witch? You can't leave her alive. Tell me two things that are special here. As far as the way the law is presented, is what? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's Sotah Dibrot. It's like a low.
It's an absolute law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not a kick. The laws up until now were called case laws. That was my joke in the beginning of the title. A case study in Parsha Shoftim. That was supposed to be my joke, but I don't know if anyone got it.
And lo techaye is weird instead of taharo.
Oh, because it's not exactly a case law. Because what's it saying? There's also a punishment. I mean, it implies a case law. Listen, it sounds absolute, but it's not like lo tirtzach, is it? Because the Ten Commandments, they don't have what the punishment is. Here it says, amachsheva. It doesn't say she won't live. It says, don't let her live. Who's Chumash talking to? If I see Hermione, you know Hermione from, which, and let's say, and Harry by the way, Potter. does it apply to Harry Potter also, or only to Hermione? Is it only a female, which are also a wizard? So remember what Rashi says? It's called a witch, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it only a female, or is, as Rashi says, it's dibar katu b'loshen oved? Usually, witchcraft is practiced by women, so that's the. But it would apply to a wizard as well, to a machshev, to a male witch. Okay, but this implies a punishment. But who enforces this? Understand my question? That's the wording here is quite different. And on top of that, is this bein adam lamakom bein adam lachaveru? How would you categorize this? It's laws between God and man, or between man and man?
It's both.
Look at the next case. Kosho chevim be'mamot yumat. If someone sleeps with an animal, you put the animal to death, or do you put the person to death? It sounds like you put the person to death, right?
It sounds like these are law commandments to the courts.
Exactly. Now, it's I'll just give a quick explanation. Up until now, the court finds out about it because there's a plaintiff and a plaintiff. There's what's called a toin and a nitan. Someone comes to court and complains. Beit Din is usually passive. They sit at the gate of the city, and people who damage has been caused to, they come and complain. Okay? And then, so two people have an argument, who owes somebody what, and Beit Din makes that decision. But Beit Din is passive, and people come to Beit Din. These are cases that Beit Din has to be proactive, because the animal that the person slept with is not going to come to Beit Din and complain. Back then, animals didn't know how to talk yet. So so I think these two cases, it's still for Beit Din, but Beit Din has to be more proactive. Are these between God and man or man and man? I think there's somewhere in between, has to do with society, but again, that's a topic for Machshava. Now, how about Pasuk Yotet? Zovech le'Elohim b'choram b'otil Hashem levado. That's for sure between God and man, right? That's the classic. I don't think there's any way to understand it. I was just after this Shabbos, I was thinking something. Usually, Zvachim go to Yud Kei Vav Kei, don't they? Usually Zevach goes to Yud Kei Vav Kei Tashem. Do you know anybody who is Zovech to Elohim in Chumash? Yeah, Rabbi Jay is smiling. We read about it on Shabbos. Yitro, remember?
True.
He wrote Olot Shlamim, Yuzavech Olot Shlamim Elohim. Now, is this sort of... I'm not sure whether it's related here, but it's really cool that Zovech Elohim Yochran B'til Hashem Levado. Is this now? Who's Elohim here? Is Elohim the judges from before, or judges the other gods, or who? You know, I think it's really cool. I have no idea. I just dawned on me on Shabbat. I was thinking when reading that Yitro, by God's name, alter Yitro is always Elohim. This Chukei Elohim, Yirat Elohim. Remember, you pick people, Yirei Elohim. No Yirei Hashem. It's Yirei Elohim. So it's interesting what Zavech Elohim is. But again, I'm getting sidetracked again. I'm going to run out of time. It's not good. Okay. But this law is, again, is a bit of an exception. Now we go back to between God, between man and man. Don't cheat, right? Or wrong a stranger, right? And don't oppress him. Why? Because you were strangers in Egypt. Now, what's the key word here again? Key, but it's a totally different word now, isn't it? Because up until now, the key word was at the beginning of a case that introduced the case law. Here we have a classic absolute law, don't we? Don't do it. Don't say what the punishment is. This isn't the punishment. What is this? This is the reason, not why you can't, the reason why you shouldn't, of all people. Meaning, you can't cheat anybody, not just a stranger. But you, of all people, shouldn't mistreat strangers. Why? You know what it feels like to be a stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. That's going to be a motivator of why you should keep the law. We haven't had this anywhere before, right? This is totally different type of law than we had in the first section. And the same thing, another absolute law. Don't afflict an orphan or a widow. You know, have rahmanas on them, treat them nicely, and don't be mean to them, and don't afflict them. Okay? And if you do that, boy, who's going to punish? Beit Din doesn't punish here. Beit Din doesn't even know about it. What happens? That amana, that widow or orphan is going to cry out to God. And it'll happen. God will hear his cry. Now, I call this echoes of the Exodus. Anyone understand why? Echoes of the Exodus? In case you forgot, let me just show you something real quick.
Bnei Yisrael cried out, and then Hashem heard
this. I just show you where the echo started. At the end of chapter 2, remember right before the burning bush. Okay? They cried out to God. Early in Bereshit, correct? And in chapter 3, the first thing that God tells Moshe Rabbeinu after he takes off his shoes is, So just like God was Shomea Artsaka, so if we oppress a stranger, an orphan, or a widow, God will hear their tzaka, and look at the punishment God warns. Then, you know, Beit Din doesn't punish, but who punishes? Here, we're at the right chapter. What chapter are we on? Here we go. No, I'm sorry, next chapter. Here we are on chapter 2. What will happen? God will get angry, and basically your wife will become a widow and your children become orphans, meaning God will take care of you. God will get angry with you and kill you. And you'll be in the same position. Now, again, that's not like the laws before. That's not Beit Din enforcing a law, but rather That's God saying, the fact that Beit Din doesn't get involved doesn't mean that I'm not watching. Okay. Then we have the famous case of Im Kesef Taveh Atami. And Rashi says on the spot, this is not a case law. It's a mitzvah. Remember, Rashi says three times where Im means chovah, not reshut, was obligation. And not only should it happen, you should lend money. But when you do that, don't take interest. Remember? And if you take a collateral, it's something the person needs, give it back to them. If it's a blanket or something you need at night or clothing, don't keep the collateral with you. Give it back to them. Because again, why? Again, echoes of the Exodus. Not to mention by the first law was about a Neved Ivri. Remember, the very first law in the law section was about how to treat a Jewish slave. Now, then again, who should you not curse? Is that our God, or is it talking about the judges? This big machloket parshanim, but if you look at the context, the Nasi notes, your political leaders, don't curse them either. This might be, don't curse the judges. That's sort of like contempt of court. And again, if that's the case, then this is allowed for society between man and man, because society falls apart when people don't respect the legal system. I'll explain this one is paying your taxes on time, the way Chazal understand it. Your trumot to masrot, which again, if the maser rishon is for the Levites, and maser sheni, sometimes maser ani, is also for people in need, then make sure to pay your taxes on time, basically. And the last line is something very general on Shekharish Tunli. Now, if you click on this in a hypertext chumash, where would that take you to? To chapter 19 in Sefer Vayikra. Remember, Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Kedosh, and most of the laws that follow that are again between man and his fellow man. They have this strange law about if an animal gets run over on the street, you know, it wasn't checked properly, you're not allowed to eat it, give it to the dogs. That's the question. Is that a din in kashrus between God and man, or is that a law of behavior? You know, that's not how that's not menschlich, like that's not etiquette. It's Jewish people don't just eat and see a dead animal on the street and sit around and eat it. But that's for a different discussion. Now we have to finish up real quickly. Chapter 23. I have this little summarize on the source sheet in a minute. We have real quickly laws for baiting, laws about returning lost items or not looking the other way, helping an animal in distress or the owner. Again, no punishment, is there? Only how you should act. And we're going from don't be a rotten person to being a nice person. And then we have laws that don't apply anymore about, midvashek or terchak, no one lies anymore, and no one takes shochet anymore. So these were ancient archaic laws that are just in Chumash for old time's sake. Okay. Now finally, look at Pasuk Tet. V'ger lo tirchatz, even though we had that before, didn't we? Don't oppress a stranger. And you of all people, like we explained before, you, echoes of the Exodus. Hope that's a new title. It's a good one. Batem, you know what it feels like to be a stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. And then we finally get to have some normal laws between God and man. 6 years, work your field, 7 years, Shemitah. I think we just had a whole series. That was the last year. That was our last year on Shemitah. I think we talked about these psukim. And just like there's 6 years like Shemitah and you rest on the seventh year. 6 days you work on Shabbos. Work. But notice the reason for Shemitah and Shabbat. It's not only for God, but rather, also to help poor people. The reason for Shabbat here, so your workers have a day of rest. So it's interesting, even these laws of man and his fellow men, I mean, man and God, have an element here between God and man. And then we have a little summary. We'll deal with that later on. Again, don't mention the names of other gods. Who are these other gods? We have to talk about later. And finally, we get some normal laws, Yom Tov. Sholosh Regalim. Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaKatzir, and Chag HaSif, we call Shalosh Regalim, and some laws about three times a year to come seen by God, and a law for Pesach about Chametz, a law of Bikurim for Shavuot, and Lot Veshagdi B'Chalevimo, and that ends the law section. What that's doing here, not for now. And then we have the promise. So we're going to deal with this section later on about the promise about the land of Israel, not today, we'll get there. I want to focus on the law section, and then we'll sit back and take questions. I'm going to summarize now the law section that we just saw. And here we are. Okay. So then we asked, what do we expect to find in the laws? Things connected to the Dibrot, what category of laws, and why not all the laws? Why this unit? That's the questions we're talking about. And we talked about, are they, what's urgent, what they're, are they most important? And then we talked about the echoes of the Exodus as we went through it. So let's summarize all the subunits. First, we had laws relating to how to serve God properly. Remember, we saw that, the opening section. Then we had Parshat Mishpatim, of damage, then we had to treat a Jewish servant. Then injuries, one person injuring another person by assault, a person's property injuring another person, a person's property damaging other property, got it? A person stealing, financial damage, property by your animal grazing or setting a fire, responsibility of shomrim, things like that, and the prime responsible for the seducer, got it? Those were the laws. And then we noticed the change that began with about witchcraft and sleeping with an animal. And we tried to, we asked, what's that category of machshevalot chayev kol shofevim bimamot yumat? This is the Vechlem Yehoram. What's the connection between that law there? And we paid attention to the word key beforehand and the word key in this line. Got it? And then we know the two punished from all these laws. And these laws were absolute. The other cases were case laws. And we noted finally how 23.9, v'gerdot techatz, matched 22, v'gerdot toneh. All ending with key, because you were strangers in Egypt. Again, we mentioned, that's simply a summary of what we talked about. Hope we got that. And then we talked about the section of, we'll return to these psukim at the end later on. And then the promise at the end, these are all questions we have to deal with. Probably we won't get to next week. So again, we had laws again. So if I have to summarize, if I'm looking at the unit now I've identified a unit of laws that come after the Ten Commandments. I've noticed that almost all the laws, I say 90%, are between God, between man and man. Only a small portion are between God and man. We'll see the balance very soon. We notice there's case law and absolute law, but all the case law comes together, doesn't it, in the beginning? And all the absolute laws follow afterwards. So we have a clear distinction between case law and absolute law. I think that was quite obvious. Again, that was the key word. Okay? And we'll get to Hammurabi if we have time later on. And what's the progression? So I have a little chart here, and I have to make it smaller. And this, Mamashi, need is something I can't figure out yet how to do on Zoom. But maybe we'll get it there. I'll try my best. If I make it too small, you can't see anything. Make it too big. I'm going to make it real small just to show the units, and then I'll focus back up. Here we go. Hope you see the whole page now. I think we see the whole page. How are we doing, Rabbi Jay? We see the whole page?
We do, but it's hard to read. And maybe you can widen.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay, that's fine. I'll make it bigger. But how does it begin? We start with the Kol Tomar unit. Yellow are laws between God and man. Got that? That's what I want you to see here. Yellow are laws between God and man. How to serve God, how not to serve God. Remember? Not gold and silver, but a mizbeach. In the smack in the middle, we have a law about how to serve God. Let me annotate here and get my little thing here. Again, this law is between God and man, how to serve God. This law is between God and man. Again, how to serve only God and not other gods. And this law is how to serve God, shosh, three times a year. And they all deal in some form or other with zebach, don't they? Mizbeach here, zovech and yochoram, and bringing korbanot on the Yom Tovim. If that's what you do when you come to the Beit HaMikdash on the regalim, and later ends with Lotis Bacha Chameis Nam Zivchi. It's basically it's bringing offerings to God. How you offer God and what you don't offer God. Now, but I made a big deal about these three sections. Why? Because they're also going to delimit subsections. And that's my title, identifying units. So this whole thing is one big unit. Actually, it's even the Kol Tamar unit is everything God said Moshe Rabbeinu, which includes that promise, which we didn't read, about going to the land of Israel. But within that, I have a law section that's a subunit. The subunit has an envelope structure. Got it? It begins with laws between man and man, between God and man, ends with laws between God and man about serving God. In the middle, a strange interruption. But that middle interruption is actually a delimiter. The delimiter is between two types of laws. This section over here now we can have a different color. Let's go with orange. How's that? This section over here, let's make it even bigger. One second. Draw. That's good. Okay. This section over here that was the key. That was the case law All these laws were case laws, everything around here. This whole section was case law. And this whole section was absolute law. Got it? These laws were all mishpatim, going to the shofet. And we have to see what's special about these laws. Got it? So I call this, if you know, remember, you know what a double whopper is? You know, a hamburger kind of thing? Where there's a bun on the bottom, a bun on the top, a bun in the middle, and one slab of meat here, one slab of meat there. So I call it a double sandwich or a hero, whatever, I forget what they call them. But I'm pointing out, I hope it's clear now. That's what I'm using the colors for. And then we'll make it bigger in a minute. What I'm trying to show you is the way the laws are presented, there's a unit, and the unit has a structure to it. And when you go through the unit and differentiate between gods, between God and man and man, it's quite obvious what the units are. And now we understand the delimiter. Now, when you read a linear Bible, got it? And just take a law at a time, you'll never notice something like this. And that's the key point I want to get across in the shir today. Remember the title, how to study a book in the Bible? You have to begin. One key tool is identifying units and paying attention to them. So there's nothing wrong with learning a pasuk and Rashi, a pasuk and Parshanim, a pasuk and what's next to it. But sometimes you have to take a step back, what's called look at the forest through the trees. Look what's going on in the bigger picture. And when you look at it, you see there's clear structure to the unit. Now, what I'm doing now again is objective. This is what's called objective analysis, which I think is, you can prove yes or no, but I think it's quite objective. That's the breakdown. So it's clear that this middle section over here is case law, with the key word, with every case is followed by Beit Din, executing the punishment. These laws have no punishment in Beit Din, and they're absolute the way they're being presented. And the laws in the beginning, the middle, and the end are between God and man, usually about how to serve God. Now, I'm going to focus now real quickly on, let me clear all these little drawings. And I want to focus on this middle section. How do I make it bigger?
What is the purple, the pink purple?
The purple color is next week's year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The purple is a summary. Everything I told you keep, and don't mention names of other gods. That's a summary line that summarizes, but we have to have what's the summary doing there? It says, I'll make it bigger in a minute. The purple line is a summary, but why the summary is not at the end, we have to talk about. But that would take too much time, and now I got to figure out how to make my screen bigger again. I lost my, oh my gosh, I'm losing my, how do I find, I'll get there. Maybe I'll do it like this. No, that's not going to make.
Wait, and the green was not case law, but you called it something else?
Absolute law. In Hebrew, in Hebrew, mishpat mutneh, like condition, Leo, right here in a minute. This is called, I can do it here, one second. Text, there we go. I make a text box right here, and I can write in Hebrew, because I have a Hebrew computer. Mishpat mutneh. Like a Tanai, that's conditional law, and this is, that's not good. Here we go. And this is Mishpat Mukhlat. Mukhlat. That's absolute law. Got it? That's conditional law, and this is, I can write here. This is absolute. There's some fancy word in English also for it, but. Someone's a lawyer. I'm sure they've heard these words before. And this is...
Yeah, apodictic, I think.
Yeah, that's too many syllables for me. this is case law. Okay. That's case law. I think they're called torts or something. T-R-T-S. Or is that from a bakery?
That's just damages. That's
what?
Torts are damages, right?
Yeah, I remember the word torts comes up sometimes in... I always get that mixed up with something.
Kamakama is torts, basically. Yes. Our Baba Nezikin is torts. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Kamakama, what is the first mission of Baba Kama? Avot Nezikin. Avot are principles. Got it? So when the rabbis study these laws, these aren't laws, these are principles. And from these laws, I derive principles. Got it? And when the rabbis paskin a future law, they don't open a Parshat Mishpatim. They study Parshat Mishpatim and derive a principle. And then based on the principles, they pass in the other laws. You follow? So I don't go and look up what's the law here. I have, through the case laws, I derive principles, and from the principles, that becomes Torah Shebapeh. And that's Masechet Nizikin. It's got like, remember, three gates, all the bubbas. Now, everything up until now was objective, and now I have to figure out how to make my screen bigger. I simply have to unstop my share to start again so I can make it bigger. Here we go. Now I can make it bigger. Now I'm going to do a quick little focus on the green section. Okay. Even the green section, which is delimited, remember, by Zovech Elohim and Shosh Regalim, has its own structure. Why? Look how it began and look how it ends. The Ger Lo Toneh, Ki Ger Meitem Beretz Mitzrayim. I'll highlight that. Okay, maybe make it even bigger. I can make it a little bit bigger. Okay, it still fits. Perfect. Okay. The Ger Lo Toneh, V'lo Techetzena, the Ger Lo Techatz. That should be obvious now. Make a little drawer here. Okay. I have this unit between this and this. Okay. Those match each other, don't they? What's in between these? This law is primarily ethical law. That doesn't go to Beit Din, but how to behave. Pretty much everything in the first section was Choshem Mishpat, and this is more like your Yerodea kind of laws, without getting to the exact definitions in Shulchan Aruch. But there's a clear distinction between the laws in the green section and the laws before in the blue section. Let me clear my drawing. Now, I want to end with one little insight, and we have to go back to this next week and talk about more in detail. What's my point? Remember the question, these laws follow the Ten Commandments. Now, I don't think they're the most urgent laws because it's not about how to live in the desert. I think we got those laws in Mara. But rather, I think I like to call them a sampling of Judaism. Ramban, in his introduction to Parshat Truma, will talk about this progression of law. And he compares the laws in Parshat Mishpatim to the laws you teach a convert as you learn about Judaism. You teach him some basics of Judaism. It's like it's a beginner's class in Judaism. If you know education, you can't teach everything all in one shot. You begin with some basics. So on the day we get the Ten Commandments, we get a quick application of what Jewish life is about. Now, most religions are basically between God and man. And of course, this religion is also between God and man. And how do most religions have relation between God and man? You bring sacrifices, don't you? And that's what we have here. We begin with how to serve God, and we end with how to serve God. But we envelope Bein Adam LaMakom as the envelope in between this Bein Adam LaChavero. And now I'm giving here subjective interpretation, which I'm agreeing is subjective. But based on the consideration of the format, I want to make an observation and suggest an interpretation for it. What's God's doing? He's trying to say that what's special about this religion, especially as a nation, is the way we serve God is primarily in the society that we build. First, having a judicial system, but a judicial system alone is not enough. You need more than that. You need a system of ethics, because I can't depend on Beit Din to do everything for you. I can't depend on the court system to ensure that there's kindness and things. Society has to do that on their own. You have to have the fear of God in you and want to do that. So this now, without going into it now, when you go to a Bible class and take academia, you're going to find tremendous similarities, scaring similarities between the blue section and Hammurabi law. I think most people in Torah Motion are aware of this already. And the Bible critics have that Haiti, it's copy-pasting. No. But when you understand the Torah was given to us, a nation coming out of Egypt, and the time of the Exodus, Hammurabi law, or something like Hammurabi law, is what everyone's familiar with. Egypt has a law system. In ancient Middle East, in ancient Near East, there were law systems similar to Hammurabi. What Chumash is doing is giving you a set of laws where the cases are very like similar to Hammurabi. What changes is the psak, is what Beit Din, what law is enforced, how to enforce the law. And that's where you're going to find the key differences. And therefore, the main chiddush of these laws of the blue section is not the fact that we're copy-pasting Hammurabi, is we're upgrading Hammurabi. And the main change when you compare them, the rights of a Jewish slave, or the rights of a servant, basically, or a slave, have been upgraded. Because the Hammurabi law, the psak, as a function of your social status. In other words, if you're a full-fledged citizen, you have certain rights. If you're not a full-fledged citizen, and especially if you're a slave, if you own a slave, you can do whatever you want to him. Where in Judaism, you own his work output, you don't own his soul. And therefore, if you hurt him too hard, he goes free. No, the way, and you can be put to death for killing your slave. It means you don't own your slave, you only work his work output. And the laws of Eved Ivri, what an upgrade to how you treat them. So basically, it's Hammurabi upgraded with the turbo in it, and the main difference being again, echoes of the Exodus of how you treat servants. And purpose, I'm not saying slave, I'm saying sometimes even a servant, because even to this day, we have what we would call slaves, and since they're servants, people work for you. You have to treat them. You know, you own the work output, but they're still human beings. You have to treat them with kindness. The next section already, that's unique, more unique to Judaism. Not taking interest and returning lost items, even someone you don't like, you know, and taking, you know, not letting the animal wander, doing something about it. Midvar shekir techak, not taking bribes, you know, and treating less fortunate people. And it's being emphasized in that second unit. And then, so the two sections again, and what I want to suggest is this section I'm going to refer to as mishpat. Why? Because it's mishpatim. And due to lack of a better word for ethics, I want to call this tzedakah. Got that? This blue section, let me get my little draw thing again. This section I'm going to refer to as mishpat. This is tzedakah. Got it? And everyone knows what I'm getting at. I want to say that this is a sampling of the underlying theme of Chumash ever since Sefer Bereshit. And that will be easy to do now. We can clear the thing and we can go back to my door sheet. Let's second. Let's go back to the mouse. Yeah. So what do we have in Sefer Bereshit? Remember why we were being chosen? In the story of Sodom, and I'm sure everyone remembers, I'll make this back to bigger again. What did God tell Moshe? What did God tell Avram? God told Avram, I can't hide from Avram. My deliberation, remember God's deliberating, should I, should not destroy Sodom? And because there's a tzad, remember there's a tzaka from Sodom, tzakat Sodom over Kiraba. God hears the cry. They should be punished, but can I give them a chance to do tshuva or not? So he has a whole discussion with Avram, whether God should give them another chance. And Avram argues if there's 50, even down to 10, righteous people who care about the injustice, God's willing to give them another chance for doing tshuva. But why does God have to share his deliberation with Avram? Because Avram's going to become that nation one day to bring blessing to other nations. Why? Because I came to know him in order, not, God doesn't know it will be, but God came to know him in order that. God came to know him, God chose him in order that he would command his children and they, their children, to follow the ways of God by doing tzedakah u'mishpat, in order that God's goal for Avram Avinu would be fulfilled. So if that was the goal of why God picked Avram in Sefer Bereshit, but God wants not individuals, he wants a nation doing that. So there's another Brit in Bereshit about, you know, going into Brit Ben Aftern, going into Egypt, out of Egypt. We're finally out of Egypt. We finally have our national identity. And we have freedom. We're about to get the land of Israel that God promised. But first, we have to become a nation in the service of God. And we're going to have a set of laws that reflects this underlying theme of a nation chosen to Mishpat and Tzedakah. So what I want to claim is this Mishpat and Tzedakah is reflected in the two sections of the speech, the Mishpatim, Mishpat, and this type of behavior we'll call Tzedakah. If I had time, I'd prove it to you from Sukkim, but my hour's up, and I know there's lots of questions in the chat we'll get to. Now, this little line over here, this transition line will be, we need this line to understand the next section about what happens when you come to Israel. We'll deal with that next week with the second section. So we went from text to context to theme. I hope I fit the title. And now I'll see, I have to stop the share and let's see if it's in the chat. Okay. Let's see. Oh my gosh. One second. Okay. So those are the source sheets. That's easy. At the end of the year, we got that. Okay. And Aaron, wasn't he an Elohim? Okay. When we get to Chet Egel, we'll talk about Aaron being an Elohim, being that. Elohim is someone of a higher authority. An Elohim is someone who makes decisions or higher up as opposed to lower. That's the beginning of chapter 7. But whether Aaron Chichi and Nevi'echa means you'll be like Elohim to Pharaoh and Aaron will be your Navi. We'll see that later on. Okay. You have to, till 7:15. Okay. I overdid it. Okay. Oh, that was a private message. Okay. Okay. For everyone, two offerings on television, JBS. Know what that is? If you check their schedule, teach about the Sanhedrin and PBS, there's a series on Vienna blood. Okay. Vienna. Okay. That's Jewish broadcast service. So there's a link there for people who want that. You also have to, the Adliot. Okay. We'll talk about the Adliot later on. The Adliot are meaningful, but they're that's right. Sometimes we take a break. Sometimes when Shabbos is over, we call it the chill break. Sometimes we forget last week's share. I mean, last week's Torah reading, we start a new one. But Parsha Mishpatim has to be always, you know, studied in context of where you left off last week. And also, I wouldn't say you have to ignore the aliyot, but you have to understand why we stopped there. So sometimes there's meaning to where you stop. Sometimes it's just a technicality. But you're right. When you look at units, you have to ignore the aliyot because they're really not part of the structure. Okay, that's not a question. And okay, thank you. Any other questions about Peh?
Yeah, can I ask something?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. The middle section, which emphasizes the aspect of Gerim and Inui, it, when you go back, as you know, to the Bris Ben Bsarim, it also includes Avdus. Now, the Avdus, you said, comes at the beginning, but here there's still this sense in which being a ger or afflicting someone is just not acceptable. But for slavery, it doesn't have that. It, you know, we have this balancing at the beginning on how to treat a slave, but we don't anywhere, if I see, well, this is how you can afflict someone.
Oh, no. So again, that's why I purposely, I'm not sure an Eved is a slave. I think an Eved can also be a servant. We have this picture of slave, of an Eved being slaves in the 1850s in America, you know, in slave trade, you know, in the plantations and stuff like that, where you mamash own them and you can do, and you can beat them and, you know, they're your property. And that's not something we do our slavery in Egypt. It's not so clear where that was the situation even in Egypt. But I think a live-in, what do you call it? You know, a worker comes to your house, you know, and works, basically, you know, does your housework every day, is a servant, but they also have to be treated properly. The fact that they get paid and they leave and, you know, they go home and they have their own, it doesn't mean they don't have the halachic status of someone who's less fortunate. That's one thing. So Eved, I don't think always means a slave. I think it means a servant or a lower class citizen. As far as why doesn't the Bible get rid of slavery altogether? No, that's a whole discussion. It requires that
charismatic
view. I think as you said, slave, the Eved is not anything that we would ever think of from the past few hundred years. It's a form of employment, because at least that's how it was among the Jews. There's so many mitzvot. But one of the important things to remember is the word, there were no converts in the sense of ger. So a ger is not a convert as of today. There's a total misuse in the translation and the meaning, because a ger is somebody who was resident in a place or.
So what Bati is talking about, in Chumash later on, there'll be two firms. There's ger ashir b'kirbecha and ger ashir b'sharecha. There's the ger in your midst, for example, who has to do brit milah to eat the korban pesach. And there's a ger ashir b'sharecha who seems to be a non-Jew, who's, you know, just living in your society, a minority in your country, who happens to be living in your country for whatever reason. And you have to treat them nicely, even though they don't own land and they're not part of their thing. Do you give them the right to vote or not? You can argue, things like that. But they're, in a nutshell, the way I understand it, is that Chumash was given in real time in the society of the time. And the laws relate to that, but the principles can be applied when realities change. So when Chumash was given, that women were fourth class citizens. Got it? When in all societies, not just in Jewish society. So Jewish law might reflect that. When society changes, so how do the principles of halacha remain the same, but their application might change because realities change? You know, that's a massive question. What I'm saying is the rabbis learn from Parsha Mishpatim a set of principles. And again, how to understand Eved when it says you were, remember how to treat a slave because you were slaves in Egypt. So when we were slaves in Egypt, we weren't converts, were we? We were total outsiders. So therefore, it's got to be, Pshat's got to be referring to the basic principle refers to people who aren't members of your society. It's not just the ger who's a convert and therefore he can't get a shidduch kind of person, but rather it can be a non-Jew who's living among you, and, you know, he, whatever reason he's there, but you have to treat him kindly, even though he's not here.
Yeah. Excuse me. In Perek Chof Bet, why is there a Parsha Petucha between Pasuk Yud Bet and Yud Gimel, rather than between Yud Dalet and Tet Vav?
Right, let me take a look at that real fast. In what parak?
Chav Bet,
okay.
There's a Parsha Petucha between Pasuk Yud Bet and Pasuk Yud Gimel. But the story of the Shomrim ends after Pasuk Yud Dalet. So why isn't the Parsha Petucha there?
No, listen, the Parsha Petucha, the Stuma here, why the Petucha is there, that's a different type of Shomer. If you learn Bava Kama, it's a question. Because there's Abba Shomrim should be together, right? No,
but yeah, between the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Zachar, there is a Parsha Stuma, or Segura.
Yeah, we hear both. It doesn't say Shomer Chinam, Shomer Zachar has to do what they're doing. That's a different question. But between the two here, this is one type of Shmira, and this is a different type of Shmira. But why the Petucha is here, again, the difference between Petucha and Stumot, they're not always totally logical. And what happens sometimes you would expect a Petucha and you get a Stuma, and sometimes you get a Stuma and you expect a Petucha. Usually there's some thematic reason for it, where Chumash is connecting things that don't appear to be connected, but you have to connect them. And sometimes it's just, it can be for a different reason. I see. You mean Shomrim here. You're right. You have Shomrim here with the Stuma, with this. That's right.
The Shoel gets its total own. I think that's your question. The Shomer Shoel gets its own complete Parsha, whereas the other Shomrim are mixed into one Parsha. So, okay. I mean, that, okay.
Rabbi, it's a bigger question because here you have Kiteis Matzach Chutzim in the same Petucha. It was the whole Petucha. All these things are Stumot. You know, the question is, why is there Petucha here, not why there's Stuma in between? But the Petucha here really should be a little bit farther down. Now, I think what's happening here is by having a Petucha here and a Petucha here, right, we're setting up an equivalence between this section and that section. Understand? I would expect the Petucha right over here, maybe here or maybe over here. But by putting them all within the same Petucha, I'm linking the two sections together. I think this is a case where I wouldn't expect a Petucha, and I'm getting a Petucha, even though logically there should be a Petucha, but having a Petucha where you wouldn't expect it, and putting this is connecting the two sections together. It's like the link, it's like linking them, because the whole point is we're linking them together, the two sections.
Rabbi?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, the statement, that not to oppress a slave because in your heart, you know, you remember that you were slaves in Egypt, I would suggest is probably the first instance of empathy noted in an ancient text. Empathy, because you're supposed to understand what it feels like, not just not to do it.
Yeah, put it this way. The empathy is going to guide you all the time. Some people have a beautiful custom of they have a custom to pledge their allegiance to God every day when they say Shema. You remember that, God's your boss and you're Jewish every day. Some people, after they say Shema every day, at the very end, they remember that God took us out of Egypt for a reason. Remember that commandment? And again, in if I follow Parshat Mishpatim, then the reason you remember the Exodus every day is not out of gratitude, oh, thank you, God, that I'm free now so I can oppress others, but rather the opposite. I have to thank God, remember why he took me out of Egypt, so that I can be a model of how to treat other people. I don't remember that he took me out of Egypt, I remember why he took me out of Egypt. And to make sure that we remember that every day, some people once a year go crazy and have this whole holiday called Passover, and that's all they talk about for a whole week and tell the whole story with the whole family. About Bibi and Abtarim and everything. But that's a custom. I'm sure people still keep that custom today, but it's definitely a praiseworthy one. Okay. I'm glad that was that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Overtime, undertime. Okay. We look forward to seeing you next week as we continue. Next year is tomorrow. Lindsay Guhart's Dr. Guhart's talking about Islam for Jews, part 3 tomorrow. And then, we continue, Alex Israel on Tuesday, part 2 in Eliyahu, time in Alakad Tuesday night. etc. Rabbi Kowalski, Dr. Sokolow, Shuli, the Parsha Shir this week, Rabbi Helfgott, my Shir on the Siddur on Friday. And as I just put in the chat box a little while ago, our new series this week starting is Malkus Simkowitz on the Jews of Ancient Egypt. Those remember she gave a fascinating series last year to the experts in sort of beginning of Rabbinic Judaism. So that will be a four-part series at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time, 9:30 Central, where she lives in Chicago, 5:30 in Israel, and then she'll finish 11:30-ish, and then we'll have a little break, and Shuli will have her series at, you know, noon on Thursday. And then next Monday, Mark Shapiro will be beginning a new series on the rise of Reform Judaism. I guess after Shaul Lieberman, now we're going to move to the rise of Reform and the traditional response. So that'll be Monday night, 8:30, those in Israel. It's well worth getting up at 3 a.m, but I get it. If you don't want to, you can always watch afterwards. But so that'll be next Monday starting a series. And then we'll have next couple of weeks, got a few more series starting. But please invite a friend. And if you're not signed up, I think if some people got in, got linked, if you're not signed up, please join our email list. And we look forward to learning with you and always getting your feedback and ideas. There's always there's so much out there, and there's so many, you know, things I'm good ideas and teachers and topics I'm not aware of. So I always like to get ideas from the people, you know, who are here, and often we do actually follow up on them. We really do. Some of the speakers have come through our participants, and that is wonderful. Others have not, but of course, you know, come from all over. So we look forward to have a wonderful week. Shavua Tov. And Rabbi, we'll see you next week, and please go. Yes. When I get to Israel, I'm going to come daven on your minyan and your street. We'll okay. Come Kazaria and Kazaria is in the food every other day. I'm sorry.
I want to thank Marty again for sponsoring, and yes, he wrote me a nice note about Akron, Ohio, so it meant a lot to me today.
Yeah, I saw you at Akron. Yes, I haven't been to Akron, Ohio either, but I want to come to your street in Haaretz in Alon Shvut before I go to Akron. Okay. All right. Be well, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Look forward to learning with you soon.
Okay, well, bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shakur. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Marty. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We should have a welcome club, you know, meet. We should have that, I don't know. Well, I'll meet in Israel, please, God. Come together. Okay.
Okay.
Be well.